Welcome to St. Dominic's Weekly. This is Father Michael. A few notes before our show. First of all, an exciting opportunity. This Thursday, our Friends in Christ group is hosting a very special lecture entitled A Guide to Unlocking the Language of Catholic Art from the 15th to 18th Centuries. And it's a lecture given by one of our own, a parishioner, Robert Keehan, who came to and connected to the church through the RCIA, the Rite of Christian Initiation for Adults, and is now a leader in that group, one of our small group leaders. And he is an avid student of all Catholic art, especially specializing in biblical history and Christian symbolism. So he'll be giving a lecture on this coming Thursday from 7 to 8:30, as is the Friends in Christ spot for lectures in the parish hall. But exciting, after his lecture, then he's going to have an excursion the next Saturday, July 28th, to a place where he is connected. That is the Palace of the Legion of Honor, and it's over in Lincoln Park. And so he'll be leading that tour. So come to the lecture if you're able to. Sign up for the tour where he kind of has a hands-on, is able to kind of take us through the palace, pointing out the power that we have and the great beauty, tradition of beauty in our faith. So that's once again Thursday the 19th at 7 p.m. for the lecture, and then Saturday from 10 to 11 over at the Palace of the Legion of Honor. This week, sit down once again, continuing with our novice discussions and interviews. This week, Brother Anthony has an international story coming from India and his passion for missions. And so whether you're on the go or taking it slow, many blessings as you enjoy today's show. Welcome back to St. Dominic's Weekly. Wonderful show for you today. I have Brother Anthony, one of our novices who have just been approved for vows and will make vows coming into the fall. Welcome, Brother Anthony.
Thank you, Father Michael. It's good to be here.
Great. Just today, just kind of, I've been doing this with a number of your novice brethren, but just to get a little sense of, as you make vows, a little bit about your story, what you've learned for this year, and maybe just to start right kind of at the beginning, what a little bit about your family, your background, where you're from, and how you found the Dominicans.
Well, I think I have potentially come the longest way, in one sense, of all of the novices in our class, in that I was born in India, in Bangalore. And my parents were living in the city, they were working there, but when I was 2.5, my dad got a job from an American company, and so when I was 2.5, we came to the U.S. and eventually settled in Southern California.
Nice. You probably don't have any memories from India, or maybe, I don't know.
Not of that age, but yeah. Since then we've been going back about every 2 years or so.
Okay, and you have family there?
Yes, most of my family is still
there.
India,
oh, so. Nice. Very good. And then what's the local language there?
So Bangalore is actually the next state up from where my family's from, but the state that my family's from is called Kerala.
Okay, and where is that geography? If I've got kind of the country in my mind.
If you imagine the big part of India that's like a giant V,
yeah,
it's the southwest kind of tip of India.
Okay,
is a state called Kerala.
Okay,
and it's very the language is Malayalam, as you asked before.
Yeah,
but it's also the home of the Syro Malabar Catholic Church.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, it's one of the, well, actually the third largest Catholic church in the world. So there's the Roman, right? There's the Ukrainian church.
Yep.
And then there's us, the Syro Malabar Rite, which comes from a tiny little state in the southwest of India and somehow has managed to become quite populous.
Wow, very good. And just to clarify that in terms of the Catholic Church, the word Catholic means...
Catholic means universal.
Universal, since all the world. And I think most folks, when they think of the Catholic Church, think of the Roman Catholic Church.
Absolutely.
Which certainly has a universality to it, for
sure. The single largest church in the world. So.
Exactly. But there are, 20-odd other sorts of rites that might be celebrated in the church, all coming from the apostolic age. That is, the apostles didn't all go to one place, but what does Jesus do? He sends them out, right? He
Absolutely.
Says, go forth and preach. Yeah. So you got some that go to Jerusalem, you got the five main kind of patriarchates, if you will.
Yeah.
And you send them to Jerusalem, down to Alexandria, over to Constantinople, and to Antioch, where they were first called Christians. And the Syro Malabar, who is the apostolic origin for that?
That was St. Thomas the Apostle, also called Doubting Thomas, but... seems he didn't have too many doubts when Jesus asked him to pack up his bags
and to head east.
And to head east, and you know, he landed in India. And there's all kinds of stories and legends about it. But
yeah, give me your favorite Thomas story of because I know that's it's I mean, I love it. Thomas going east is really there's lots of kind of wonderful legends and stories. I wonder if, especially from the Sierra Malabar culture and that you've been steeped in, if there's that
sure.
kind of a pride of place of certain stories.
Oh, well.
Or you have a favorite?
I think so. Maybe two of them that kind of weave in together.
Okay.
So the thing is, a lot of this story comes from a book that was written, a legend that was written about St. Thomas the Apostle that was found amongst the Christians in, where was it? Edessa, which is north of Palestine, I think.
Okay.
And as the story goes, Jesus appeared to Thomas and asked him to go preach the gospel in India. And Thomas's reaction was, "Lord, I will go wherever you want me to, but I will not go to India."
Sounds like Jonah a little bit earlier.
Yeah, something like that. Well, as it turned out, God had other plans, because in the meantime, a king, according to the legend from Edessa in northern India, had plans to build a grand, magnificent palace. Mm-hmm. And so he assigned one of his servants to go find an architect capable of building it. Well, the servant somehow ended up near Palestine, where Thomas was, and Jesus appeared to the servant who had gone looking for the architect and said, "I have an architect for you who is my servant, and I'm willing to basically sell him to you," you know, in so many words. And so Christ led this guy to Thomas the Apostle and said, "This man's an architect. He can help you." Thomas, in the meantime, has, you know, very little idea what's going on. But, of course, when God plans something, he can't really fight it.
That's right.
Next thing he knows, he's in India building a spiritual palace for this this king by preaching to his people and using the king's money to build up a lot of the poor, impoverished people in the king's kingdom.
Nice.
So that's kind of one of the more interesting stories that I've heard.
I've never heard that Thomas, the kind of spiritual engineer or architect for building the church.
And what's funny is, well, there's a lot of, shall we say, debate on the Thomas legends, because there's some evidence of his presence in South India and some evidence in North India, and there's a lot of back and forth. But in terms of the continuous tradition of Christianity in India, it comes down to South India, where I'm from, in Kerala. There are actually stone crosses and churches that, according to our tradition, go all the way back to his time.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, that were established by him, and there has been a living tradition of that faith that has existed from apostolic times.
Yeah, I mean, which is something that, obviously, I mean, here we are in California, and, you know, it's like, oh, look at our church. It's a little over 100 years old, aren't we? don't we have such a legacy of history? And the places where you're from, you can literally go back 2,000 years, at least in terms of the living tradition.
Yeah,
exactly,
absolutely.
And the pass down. I mean, that's that's real history, right?
that's
history, so you think of that. And living history in that way. So back to the story, back to the kind of the narrative. this is this podcast here, you know, from narrative. Your father comes for work, and you are then raised in California.
In Southern California. We lived in Tustin, Irvine, and then San Diego for the greatest length of time. But right before my eighth grade year, so the summer between seventh and eighth grade, my family moved to Kansas City.
Mm.
So that's where I went to eighth grade. That's where I went to high school. And to get back on the vocational track of things, for me, my family was very strongly Catholic from as far back as I can remember. There's been a sense in my family of our faith being the absolute most important thing about serving God, serving His church, and all of that. And part of that is the cultural aspect of it. You know, in Kerala, in my family, and in my extended family as well, our faith is really woven into our daily lives, our tradition. Mm. We say a rosary as a family daily. That's something, I mean, when I go back to India, my family there, my extended family does that. My grandparents have been going to daily mass, you know, and my parents did the same thing. When as long as we have been able to, we have gone to daily mass.
Nice.
And so for me, that was very much the environment that I grew up in. So.
Nice. What a gift too, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I'm incredibly thankful to my parents for that, because that's something that I realize a lot of people don't have the blessing to receive. And for my parents to raise me up in that way, and to steep me in that tradition, is has been, I think, the single most formative thing in my life.
No, and I'll often remark on that. So obviously we do a lot of wedding preparation here at St. Dominic's, and this year we probably average, you know, almost two weddings in terms of both preparation and actual wedding, you know, ceremonies and masses here a week. And when I'm with couples and doing preparing, the one thing, as I've done this now for almost 10 years, is to be able to say the delta, the difference you can make in terms of your faith, is just to live your faith with your future family, with your mm-hmm. children, right? To pray together as a family, to eat together as a family, to have a kind of build a culture, create a sense of God's presence in your family. What a gift that is. And certainly even for the priesthood vocations, we won't have, you know, someone say, oh, you know, Father, how do I get my child's kind of gone away from the faith, or I'm worried about this. Well, you pray, you know, you've got that, to have that kind of culture. So it sounds like you had that, those seeds of vocation sown early.
Yeah,
and strongly.
And I think as a result, I don't have a first memory of being interested in the priesthood, of thinking that I might be called.
Mm.
It was just always a valid option. It was always something that I thought I could do if God called me to it. And I always felt enough of an attraction that I thought perhaps God might be calling me to it. So nice. What remained to me was to sort of discern that, to clarify that call and figure out if that really was where God was calling me.
Nice. And you have siblings?
I have one younger sister.
Okay. And is she, where is she vocationally? In terms
she
of?
Is just finished up high school and is looking to go into med school in Kansas
very good.
City.
Oh, so. Excellent. Okay. And the family, the family's in Kansas City.
In Kansas,
still
yes.
Okay,
my
nice.
Family's in Kansas City.
Nice. So you're in Kansas City, and how do you find your way to sunny California from Kansas City?
Well, in high school, I looked at diocesan priesthood, and as much as I appreciated it and I really saw how important that was to the life of the church, I realized that wasn't where God was calling me. So when it came time for college, I was kind of torn. I had to decide, well, do I follow this call to the priesthood that I think might be there and try to figure out where exactly I go, or do I do what kind of fits with my strengths, my talents, you know, math, engineer. I wanted to be an engineer, an aerospace engineer.
Mm.
And, you know, I'd applied to a number of engineering colleges and stuff like that. But eventually something came up. Franciscan University of Steubenville has what they call a priestly discernment program, which is set up to allow men to discern a call to the religious life or to the priesthood, but in the context of just an average Catholic college. Well, average, but they're absolutely Orthodox, strongly Catholic, and they really live that Catholic identity.
Yeah.
So I figured, you know,
I think isn't Franciscan the place where you go if you can't get into Thomas Aquinas College?
I think it's the other way around, actually. You know, we have
Brother
we
John a... Peter and I like to gang up with when it goes to colleges. No, but there's nothing, I will say, Thomas Aquinas certainly has produced many vocations, but Franciscan having an actual program for that has definitely a step up on that than Thomas Aquinas.
You know, there's some benefits to be had from... You know, 2,500 students enrolled in undergrad.
There you go. Yeah, versus what? Well, gosh, when I went there, it was like 220 students.
Yeah.
So no, different realities for sure.
Different reality.
But that priestly fraternity,
discernment
program. How was that helpful for you? How would you find there?
The big benefit of that program is that it's designed to help young men discern by actually living what formation life would be like.
Yeah.
So we had morning and evening prayer as a community.
Yeah.
We had daily mass, daily holy hours, daily rosaries. We had spiritual directors, formation directors, retreats, ministries, all the kind of stuff that you'd find in a seminary. In fact, the whole program was modeled after the program for priestly formation that is the guiding document for all of the American seminaries. And as a result, in fact, a lot of diocesan seminaries will actually accept time in the priestly discernment program.
Oh, a seminary? Really?
Seminary formation.
Really?
Pre-theologate formation. So I have guys that graduated with me that went straight into first theology, didn't even have to do pre-theology.
Oh, interesting. Now, do you have to, just for folks who might be listening, oh, this sounds interesting, do you have to commit, I mean, can you date? Can you kind of have a call, the kind of the full, fulsome college experience? Or if you're in, you're already saying, I'm very directed towards religious,
well,
not just religious life, but the priestly discernment.
In terms of discernment, I think the mentality behind the program is that to really discern a call to the priesthood, you have to dedicate yourself to discerning that call.
Okay.
So when you're living the life, you need to really live the life. You need to give it 100%.
Okay.
And trust in God that he will tell you if that's where you're supposed to go. So in terms of dating, there's no dating. Just in terms of the time commitments, you know, I list off all the stuff that we have to do every day.
Exactly, yeah.
Even doing that, there's not really much time left over for...
It's one thing people don't say, oh, did you ever date? I was like, when did I have time to do that? That takes time and energy.
So, so with all of that, though, the real benefit of that is a certain clarity of discernment that the program affords.
Was there something that really made the difference? Because your engineering and directed priestly discernment seem like kind of two very divergent paths. Was there something that says yes or no? Or do you remember that process or that decision making?
Well, for one of the things for me was when I applied to Franciscan, I looked at what they had that was of a more technical bent, and I saw they had a computer science degree. So I thought, oh, well, what the heck? You know, I'm applying here anyway. I might as well apply for that. So while I was there, I did double major in philosophy and computer science and then minored in theology, with the philosophy and theology being for the priestly discernment program and meeting those requirements, the USCCB's requirements. And the computer science sort of being my personal hobby, you know, my little fun thing to do. And that was part of it. But the other thing was, again, I just had this sense of God calling me. And I knew that if I was going to be honest with myself, that I couldn't try to fudge this. I couldn't try to run around, walk around it. If God was calling me, I needed to find out. And I needed to find out as soon as possible, because he's given me this life and I can't waste it for something that's my interest if he has something that he wants me to do.
Nice. It's like you're learning to swim. You just jump right in the deep end of the pool and let's go for it.
Yeah, you know, and just like Thomas, it's this sense of if God's calling you to do something, even if it's not the last thing you want to do, he's going to get you to do it anyway. So, you know, you might as well go along with
it. Go get with the program. So how did God get you to get you together with the program for Dominicans? Because that's a Franciscan, let's be honest.
It is a Franciscan.
It's a Franciscan heavy. And here, especially given your culture, we don't have, let's be honest, there's no Syro-Malabar ministry necessarily here. We have actually at the parish, as you've come to discover, we do have mass, but it's not that we're not like steeped in that kind of culture as a province. So, how did you end up here? How did the Lord end up nudging you to the Western province?
As it turns out, at first I was looking elsewhere. I looked in at the Salesians of Don Bosco in India. Mm-hmm. I looked at, well, their Bangalore province specifically. I looked at a group called PIME, the Pontifical Institute for the Foreign Missions. And I was very impressed by both of them. They do a lot of really good work for Christchurch and for the poor, a lot of missionary activity, evangelization, a lot of the things that attracted me to the priesthood in the first place. But again, there was something that I can't quite describe, a spiritual sense, if you will, that wasn't where God was calling me. And as I was talking to my formation director about it at Franciscan University, in my director of the program, he recommended, hey, maybe you should look at some domestic orders. So the eastern province of Dominicans is not terribly far from Franciscan University of Steubenville. Their house of studies in D.C. is, I think, like a six-hour bus ride, mega bus ride away. Yeah. So I called up Father Ben de Kroll. Mm-hmm. I signed up for one of their come-and-sees. I went there, and that was, to be honest, my first experience with Dominicans. That was, I think, January of 2016.
Nice.
And I was struck. I just, for the first time, I felt like this makes a lot of sense for me in terms of my background, my formation, my spirituality, my interests and desires, and where I think God is calling me, where God can use me. But for some reason, as much of an attraction as there was, it didn't quite click. So there was something missing. So I thought, oh, whatever, I'll keep looking around, but I'll keep that in mind. If nothing else seems better than the eastern province of Dominicans, I'm going to apply there because it seems to work.
Nice. It was on a list, a short list.
It was the top of that short list for now. But, you know, God had a way with things, and he was able to use my computer science degree. I got a job with a company called Cerner in Kansas City. I was a traveling consultant. I worked with different hospitals that had bought Cerner's software and helped their IT staff to install it and train them up and stuff like that.
Were you enjoying that kind of work? Because, I mean, certainly there's the kind of paying the bills as you kind of further discern, or there's the actual work itself.
It was...
Because there's not a lot of that in this life. Just to give you a little future preview.
You know, I enjoyed... Well, actually, one of the things I enjoyed particularly about that, in contrast to some of the internships, just straight-up programming internships that I've done before, is that this job had a lot of interaction with people. It wasn't just sitting behind a desk at a computer typing all day.
Gotcha.
It was flying out to client sites, meeting with the staff, getting to know a lot of different people.
Nice.
And really helping them through whatever it was.
Kind of helping them troubleshoot and navigate.
Exactly. And,
like
and all kinds of things like that. So, and, you know, I had a great team that I worked with. It was a lot of fun. But there was this underlying sense that whole time of dissatisfaction. Mm. That this is great. This is a good job. It pays well. But this is not where I'm called to be. And so I've got to keep looking. And it was this kind of, you know, this driving force behind me that kept me going. And eventually, as a result, I found Father Stephen Maria's number on the internet.
Oh, so you're an internet vocation.
I am an internet vocation. Oddly enough, unlike the other novices in my class, I didn't go through the whole website. I don't think I've seen more than two or three pages of the website.
Really?
I
www.opwest.org.
That's the one.
But you didn't go. So how did you find it?
I Googled it.
Oh, okay.
Good old Google. I looked up Western Province Dominicans Vocation Director, hit enter, and, you know, that
just
first
hit,
link said, contact our Vocation Director, Father Stephen Maria Lopez.
Nice.
Gave his email and phone number and all that, so I called him up, had a conversation with him. As it turns out, he actually is from, his family goes to the same parish in San Diego that my family went to when we were there. He remembers me.
Really?
Yeah, he was, when I first met him, he was like, I think I remember you. You were that little kid that would show up to daily mass with your mom and your little sister.
What are the chances?
I know, right? Yeah, that's how.
Because he
that
wasn't
works.
A Dominican at that point either,
just
was he?
Barely.
Just barely. Okay.
Just barely. Because we moved to Kansas City, I think, right after he entered.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
So if you look at the parish directory from right before we left, you flip to the page that his family is on. You see him in his habit there with his family.
Nice. Oh, very good. But you had no idea.
I had no idea.
I wouldn't remember that. Oh my gosh! Wow. See how the Lord is talking about St. Thomas and
he has his ways.
Yeah, providential serendipity there. So you and obviously you entered. In terms of this year, looking at this year, certainly in your class. Are there things when you came in that you expected about Dominican life that now you kind of, looking back on it, have matured or deepened? I often give the example of a Dominican who told me that the reasons why you come into the life aren't necessarily the same reasons that you stay. Do you have any experience or story around? Or
I don't have a single story that stands out, but sort of a general topic that's been a great opportunity for growth for myself and for both self-understanding and learning more about God has been coming to a greater depth in my own prayer life that I think the novitiate has been a wonderful opportunity for, first of all, because we have so much time for prayer and personal study. Because I think when I applied and, you know, went through that whole process and entered, I had this idea, you know, Dominicans, they're contemplative and active, and they study and they pray and they do the divine office and all that. But I didn't have that concrete understanding of what it means to live a life that is both contemplative and active. And with novitiate being as much a focus on contemplative life as it is, it really gave me a chance to grow in that direction, to find out why God has me here specifically, and to grow in understanding what it means for me to be a man after God's own heart, to be a man of prayer, and to grow closer to Him.
Yeah, no, and I think that this is you'll never have another year like this in terms of a novitiate, because things kind of tend towards the apostolic and the study and so forth. So to hear that kind of rooting and grounding in prayer is what is kind of the whole point of the novitiate. So that's fantastic. Any of you mentioned kind of personal self-study, are there things that you would recommend to folks in terms of things you've studied that were helpful for you this year?
I think on the term of spirituality, two books that I have read that stick out are unfortunately both Carmelites, but John of the Cross and Teresa of Avila. I got to read a book of each of them. John of the Cross's Ascent of Mount Carmel.
The Ascent of Mount Carmel by John of the Cross,
And Teresa of Avila's autobiography.
Nice.
And what stood out to me most about both of them is a realization of how important it is to be willing to give up everything about this world.
Mm.
That if we renounce everything we hold dear in this world and give it all up to God, that He can take that complete, total self-sacrifice and he can do wonders with it. But until we do that, you know, there's always going to be some part of us that's holding us back. So for me, that I think has been the biggest lesson that I've learned, is to refocus my life into giving everything to him, not holding anything back, no interests or desires of my own that are apart from him, that are separate from him.
And the Lord has a way of purifying us if we try to cling, like Thomas say, anywhere but India. He has a way of stripping away the India.
And you know, as iron sharpens iron,
yeah.
Brothers sharpen brothers.
Oh yeah, yes they do. It's fun. One of the highlights of the pilgrimage was to see the relics of both of those great Carmelite saints, mm-hmm. Teresa of Avila and John of the Cross, who's buried in Segovia, and just the beautiful, obviously, John the Cross with his poetry and the experience of that dark night, and even that little cell that he was like imprisoned in, his own brothers. If you don't know the story of John of the Cross, just in terms of the drama of the story, it'd make a very dramatic, you know, film. In terms of your own, I can't imagine my own brother. Well, maybe I can't, but not imprisoning you in a place you can't even stand, and having to escape, and you can't even stand up in the little cell they put in, and basically trying to starve you out. And yeah, no, that is a heroic in terms of his own love of God, but willingness to like you say, to give all to him. So the Ascent of Mount Carmel, John mm-hmm. of the Cross, and biography of St. Teresa
of Avila.
Of Avila, who, and this is one aspect of the pilgrimage that I certainly was not quite as aware of, but not in the same way, is how formative Dominicans were for her reform of the order.
Yeah, I noticed that too, reading her autobiography. Yeah. She keeps mentioning this wise Dominican father that guided me. You know.
Yeah, no, she had a whole bevy of them.
Right.
Yeah, no, and in fact, as the story goes, when she, it's like this huge deal when she moves deeper into the kind of a real sequester cloister mm-hmm. at San Jose in Avila, and it brings about, it's not just like a little private spiritual thing, but because of the culture, like the town begins to riot, and the mayor has to come out and say, okay, what are we going to do? And they call basically theologians from all the different religious orders. Mm-hmm. And almost all of them say she should just go back and be obedient to whatever the thing is, except for one.
A Dominican
who says, this is authentic. We should
this
let
is
it.
From God, yeah.
Exactly. It kind of does. It's kind of a little bit like the Gamaliel, like if it's from God, it'll, who are we to fight it? And if it's not from God, it'll peter out anyway, kind of thing. So it's in that kind of line of reasoning, but it's good. So, and then maybe in terms of your own name and patronage, was there a reason behind that? Because as religious, of course, we can reaffirm our baptismal
right.
name. We can take a religious name.
So my religious name is Anthony Augustine.
Okay.
So Brother Anthony Augustine Charian. The first part of that, Anthony, is my baptismal name.
Yeah.
So just the way the tradition runs in India, I got, being the firstborn son, I got my paternal grandfather's name.
Oh, nice. Okay.
So because of that, and because St. Anthony of Padua, who's my patron, is, you know, a great preacher.
Yes.
Although he's a Franciscan, but we like Franciscans.
Oh, sure, sure. they can co. We can coexist.
Yeah, we can coexist.
I saw the new bishop, who's a Dominican, has as part of his heraldry
the crossed arms of the Franciscan thing.
So even in a Dominican auxiliary bishop can have Franciscan motifs.
Wow,
so
he is in San Francisco.
In San Francisco, exactly. Yeah, exactly. So no, it's Anthony's certainly a wonderful preacher.
Mm-hmm. And you know, because of, I think also the family connection, I wanted to keep that.
Mm, yeah.
So I kept that as my first name and the religious name, and I took on Augustine because, first of all, I think his story of how he was a great sinner.
Mm.
And was brought to repentance by the prayers of his mother and by his own search for God, his own longing for God, really spoke to me. You know, I figured if St. Augustine, doing all the things that he did, screwing up as bad as he did,
yeah,
can come out of that and come to God and come to be one of the greatest saints, one of the greatest theologians that the church has known, then, you know, I've got some hope at least.
There's hope.
There's hope.
There's hope the Lord can use me.
And, you know, I also really just enjoyed reading the stuff that he wrote, whether it's the little snippets that we get in the Divine Office mm-hmm. every so often from his homilies or City of God, his confessions.
And just to say, too, if you've never read the Confessions of St. Augustine, Bucket list. You must. A must read.
Must read. Yeah.
Absolutely must.
And don't
read.
Stop at the eighth chapter. Go all the way through.
You're going to challenge us with all the philosophy and,
yeah,
and the time and the gents. No, it's if nothing else that you read this year, the Confessions of Saint Augustine are a must do. It's mm-hmm. it's powerful in many many ways. And then maybe just a final thought about you think your relationship. I mean you have missionary instincts for sure in your culture. Do you see yourself maybe being able to celebrate the Mass both according to the Roman Rite and
yeah,
the Sermon Malabar as well?
Actually, when I came here to join for the novitiate,
mm-hmm.
one of the things that my family did, you know, they brought me here to see me off and everything. We actually went over to St. Albert's and had dinner with Father Stephen Maria, so he could, you know, sit down with my parents and kind of introduce them to our mother house there. But one of the first things he did was he went to his mailbox and he pulled out a sheet of paper that he had from the Congregation for Eastern Churches in Rome. It was written in Latin. It was all official, had a
yeah.
signature at the bottom.
Yeah.
And it was basically the permission that he got from the Congregation for Eastern Churches
yeah.
for me, being of an Eastern Church, to
That's right.
join a Western order.
That's right.
But as part of that, just like Father Christopher Fadock, and
yes.
we have a few other priests in our province who have by ritual
faculties. Yep.
That is very much an option for me, and that's something that I would really like to pursue, because I have grown up with a good amount of exposure to the Cyril Malabar liturgy, and even though I'm not, you know, I'm more familiar with the Latin Rite, it's still something that I enjoy going to. I really appreciate it, and I would like to, if God calls me to be a priest, and if he takes me in that direction, to celebrate it someday.
Oh, he's taking you in that direction. Let me go ahead and confirm that for you. But no, and most people wouldn't realize that to be part of, once again, a part of the Roman Catholic Church, if you're not baptized Roman Catholic, you have to have special permission
yes.
during your religious life. And yeah. so that's why you had to get that special permission to be a Dominican. It's certainly
yep.
in the discipline of the Roman Rite. For just someone who has never been to a Cyril Malabar Rite, how is it maybe different? Are there things that just the casual observer would kind of leap to the eye or to the
yeah.
ear that from just, you know, a regular, if you will, quote unquote, Mass.
So the majority of Masses Kurbana is our word for it, the Holy Kurbana.
Mm-hmm.
The majority of them that I've been to have been in Malayalam.
Okay.
And, for example, in India, when we go there and we're in an actual Cyril Malabar church and not borrowing a Latin church just for our Mass, as we have to do here in the U.S. oftentimes, The churches that I've been to are often set up with two altars. There's sort of a low altar, so to speak, and a high altar, and there's a curtain separating the two.
Oh.
So the beginning of Mass, through some of the introductory rites, the curtain's closed, and there's a certain rite where the priest turns around, and the whole church essentially reverences the crucifix, tabernacle, and the high altar. The curtain's opened, and then the rest of the liturgy of the word continues from that low altar.
Okay.
But eventually, as he moves into the liturgy of the Eucharist, he moves up to the high altar.
Oh, to the other altar.
The Mass is done from there.
So, like, the liturgy of the word is done from the lower altar,
from
basically?
From the lower altar, and it's done facing the people.
And then transitions,
and
turns.
And then transitions, yes.
To the high altar, everyone facing the same direction.
Yes.
And I'll bet it's liturgical east is where everyone's facing it at some
yeah,
point. Or is
I've
that a tradition?
I've never sat down with a compass
oh, okay.
and figured it out.
Well, no, even if it's not geographic east, liturgical east.
Liturgical east, yes.
Yeah, everyone's
yeah.
facing the same way towards yep. the resurrection. Wow, that's I as you say that, I don't think I've ever been in a church that would be set up that I've been to the rite that we have here.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's on Saturdays once a month, but never been in a church where the church has actually been set up towards that orientation.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
it's a full breath of the universal
mm-hmm.
Catholic
mm-hmm.
church in that way. Brother Anthony, it's been fantastic to have you to have you here. We look forward certainly to many many years of the Lord like Thomas. Pulling you ever greater and to be that engineer for the Lord as both your interests and talents belie. And as long as you don't say, well, whatever you have in mind as your India, the Lord will no doubt bring you there. So for all of you listening, may you have a glorious week and may all that you do truly radiate the joy of the gospel here in the heart of the city. Amen.
Amen.